I'm not going to ask you to open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. I'm going to ask you largely to listen, because we're going to be going through a lot of scripture tonight. And I'm just going to almost let the Bible speak for itself. I may be commenting occasionally, but for the most part, listen to what God's Word says. We're thinking about what wisdom the book of Proverbs gives us on the issue of anger. You know, when I was younger, I was an angry person. In my teenage years, there were long and deep frustrations with not understanding the world, the culture that I was thrown into upon returning from Africa. Came home from Africa, I'd never been in America. The little bit that I knew about stuff outside of Africa was largely on BBC News. I could tell you all about cricket. I could tell you all about soccer. I knew nothing about American football, baseball, softball. Never seen TV. And that was my world. My parents come back to the world that they came from. They had no idea. They had no idea how difficult it was to come into a world that was totally unknown. Imagine at 12, your whole experience is of a certain part of America, and all of a sudden you're dumped on a mission station out in the bush where everything is different. I grew up in a church for 12 years in which I did not speak the language. So I went to church every Sunday for 2.5 hours and didn't understand a thing. And that was a lot of the seed in this frustration, in this very little experience in developing relationships, and therefore almost no interpersonal skills. Now, some of you would say, I could work on that some more. I understand that. But boy, if you knew what I was like at 14 and 15, you know, this is an amazing grace of God. And, you know, just hated people on sight. Now, the world is bad, and people are crazy, and I don't like being here, and you know, you're walking around a 15, 16-year-old, and that's the way it was. And being self-aware that I was different, and then eventually taking pride in being, well, I say a little weird. No, I was probably very weird. And then there was all the suppressed anger in the classic ACDC way of talking. You have blower-uppers and you have clamor-uppers. And I was a clamor-upper. And so the explosions of... my dad was a boxer. He taught me to fight and took some martial arts. And so, so, you know, there was this sort of suppressed interior anger that suddenly exploded on people and eventually led into a situation in high school where I almost beat a kid to death. And all this was wrapped in self-righteous, placid, seething dislike for people. And then conversion and grace and the Word and discipleship all wrought an amazing change. And God brought all within 3 years that wrought this change to my life. So what helped? You know, how do you go from, you know, what I was like from 12 to 16-ish around there to the wonderful person that Esther met? Two things. I was recognizing that I was easily angered, though I did not express it outwardly. I recognized that. I could see myself. And one of my mentors taught me to begin a life of self-examination, not morbid introspection, but living an examined life. Do you hear what you are thinking? Do you hear what you are saying to yourself? Do you hear what you are aiming at other people? But you never say it out loud. But you say it in your heart. Those kinds of things. And then I went through the book of Proverbs at my mentor's suggestion and read every verse on anger, wrath, and strife. I just took a concordance back, you know, when I was young, there was no digital anything. And you've still lined up to sign up for college courses, right? You know, and took a card, and yeah, I'm that old. And so I just took a concordance, and it was in that time I was changing from being largely in the King James to doing my work in the New American Standard. And I just read, concordance said, okay, here's a verse, so I would read it. And I think the Word did a lot of its work in my life, wrought its grace, did its spiritual work. And but let me say there is much more to say about anger than just from the book of Proverbs. But that is our study. We are looking at the wisdom of God from the book of Proverbs. And so we'll focus on that. I am aware that this creates a couple of gaps, particularly for us as we think about the New Covenant and the New Testament. And Ephesians addresses the issue. Colossians addresses the issue. James addresses the issue. And so I hope this also spurs you to say, well, what else does the Bible have to say on this subject? So this is not a lesson on anger. This is a lesson on the wisdom, that what wisdom speaks to anger. When we come to the book of Proverbs, then, there are three primary words that are in this word group. And here's a sample of those verses that we will consider more when we shift to a little bit of a thematic. But what are those three? First is Proverbs' use of the word just anger and its different forms. Here are some of those verses. And so this is kind of a taste of what it's going to be like tonight. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. That verse alone has been a key to in helping me to realize how often I loved to do verbal battle. And so if you started a war, I win. I mean, that was just my attitude. And it didn't help. That was in debate class in college, and so in high school. So I had all the tools. And but this soft answer turns away another person's anger. Then in the same chapter, chapter 15, verse 18, it writes, "A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention." I was the first part of that, a hot-tempered person. And as a result, was often involved in different kinds of low-level conflict and so on. And learning to be slow to anger, so that even when there is contention, you respond to it, speak to it in such a way as to quieten it down. Furthermore, Proverbs says, "A man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes much transgression." You don't have to comment on that much, do you? You just have to believe it. You believe that's true. That wrath and that strife is stirred up and transgression is caused by a person who is a person of wrath or is given to anger. An angry person. Whether they act it out, whether they speak it, but just that they are that way on the inside. They tend to be the source of a lot of strife and contention. Proverbs 14:29, "Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is hasty temper exalts folly." Slow to anger has great understanding. So a person who loses their temper quickly, a person who is an angry person, he who has a hasty temper, then is someone who is not wise and understanding, but rather is a person who admires, exalts, lifts up foolishness and folly. Proverbs 16:32, "Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." Well, it's easy to see then that being slow to anger is a result of ruling one's spirit, of self-control, self-discipline. And self-control is not, and self-discipline are not just sort of you know, getting hold of yourself. And it has a matter of a process of self-recognition and knowing that this is coming and knowing that you are feeling and listening to the words in your head and then putting off those words by thinking differently and following the pattern of Ephesians and Colossians. Proverbs 19:11, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is glory to overlook an offense. Proverbs 19:11. And what we're hearing in all of these is that the wise person, the person of understanding, and if you will, the Christian, is a person who does not use anger as some kind of tool to manipulate others and recognizes the destructive effect of anger and therefore learns to be calm, to have a quiet answer, to not speak harshly. And we'll see more of how this works out. A man of great wrath will pay the penalty. For if you deliver him, you will only have to do it again. And the Hebrew here really says again and again and again. And so a person who loses their temper, a person of great wrath, not only pays a consequence, but then is entrapped into their own world, in their own selfdom, in their own anger, and requires the delivery of others. And so Galatians 6 ministry comes into play with an angry person. And so they need help. They need helpers. Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. This is such an important verse. Being careful who your friends are and holding at a distance someone who is very quick to anger, who loses their temper easily, and recognizing the tendency to pick up their offenses, to pick up their way of talking, to pick up their lack of relational wisdom, and so on. And so you can be an influence, you can be a counselor, but you have to recognize that when you develop a friendship, then often you develop this empathy and sympathy for their anger. You end up helping them to justify their own anger. But the real danger here is you learn his ways. You just learn to be like him. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the bosom of fools. And so the proverb in Ecclesiastes 7:9, just to wrap this up, be not quick in your spirit to become angry. Don't be quick to anger. A second word that Book of Proverbs uses a lot is the word wrath. Uses the word wrath. What is the difference between anger and wrath? Well, wrath is different from anger in two ways. Either it is the long, slow burn that gains energy over time, usually accompanied by bitterness. In God's case, his wrath is long held back, not because he is bitter, but because he is gracious and merciful. The Bible is clear that the longer God withholds the outpouring of his wrath, the greater that wrath will be at the end of days. So wrath is this long, slow, and eventually it erupts. All right? My dad was like this. My dad often appeared to be a very patient person until he lost it. And when he lost it, you run for the hills. There's also another sense of wrath. Wrath is this out of control explosion in the moment. It may have come from a long buildup, or it may be just habitual. And so there's this sense of burning. So anger is just this word that describes a whole series of interactions and responses and so on. But when we talk about wrath and a person whose wrath is unleashed, the word connotates, particularly in the Hebrew, this idea of a fire. And the fire, or it's a lava kind of explosion. It may come in the moment, may come at the long period of time. And that's the sense of it. And that's a little bit of how it is different from anger. So we find this in Proverbs 27:4. Wrath is cruel, and anger is overwhelming. But who can stand before jealousy? Now, the interesting thing here is that in the context, that, you know, it's talking about relational jealousy. But behind this is the jealousy of God. God is a jealous God. God is a jealous husband for His bride, for His spouse, for His wife in the Old Testament. And this jealousy leads to a godly expression of His own anger and wrath. But for humans, you know, it's interesting the weight of one. Wrath is cruel, anger is overwhelming, but jealousy? Who can stand before that? A king's wrath is like the growling of a lion, but his favor is like the dew on the grass, Proverbs 19:12. And so a king's wrath is, and the growling lion is the one who, you know, it's like a growling dog. It's that what God has put in the animal kingdom that warns us trouble's about to happen. The king's wrath is a messenger of death, and a wise man will appease it. The third verse in this area, the king's wrath is like the growling. He provokes him to anger, forfeits his life. And so, just three times here together, Solomon points us to the danger of an angry ruler, of someone who is in authority, in their case, a king. But in our case, you know, it could be a boss, it could be even a husband in a home. But the king's wrath is a messenger of death. The king's wrath is to be paid attention to because it's a warning, and the king's wrath should not be provoked, but rather it should be assuaged and carefully handled. Proverbs 27:3 says, "A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's provocation is heavier than both." And this provocation word here is rooted in the word wrath. So a fool's wrath that is provoked, if you will, is heavier than both. And then from the New King James, "An angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man," there's that word again in a different, slightly different translation, "a furious man abounds in transgression." And so Proverbs uses this word anger, it uses the word wrath, and then as a part of this word group, it also uses the word strife. And so in Proverbs 17:14, "The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so quit before the quarrel breaks out." Strife, then, is when anger and wrath are at war. When there is, again, just the word strife, when two angry, a person is angry and now a person gets angry, or maybe a third person, and now it's just going round and round. All right? And unfortunately, you see so much of this in social media, where people are just angry, and the way they speak, and there's this stirring up of strife. And the Bible's counsel is get out of that, quit before the quarrel breaks out. When you sense it coming, disengage. But if you're an angry person, there is a certain satisfaction that comes by engaging. Yes? Yes? Yeah, I loved a good fight. Proverbs 20, verse 3, it's an honor for a man to keep aloof from strife, but every fool will enter into quarreling. It's an honor to stand aloof, to not get involved, to disengage. But every fool will get involved in quarreling. Proverbs 26, 20. For lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no whisperer, quarreling, as a form of this word strife, quarreling ceases. And so the whisperer, the person who's not up here in the middle of the argument, but they're going around and they're poking at people and they're pulling at people and they keep it going, and yet it appears as though they don't have anything to do with it, you know. This whisperer. There's a whole thing to look at in the Proverbs. There's not many verses, but what it does say about the whisperer is very interesting. And so, the whisperer then is like wood in a fire. And they keep the fire going. If you withdraw that person, disengage that person, recognize and call out that person, sometimes you can keep strife from continuing. In a similar verse, as charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. And so here is a person who is easily provoked, a person who is easily angered, they're thin-skinned, or a person who just always has to win. It doesn't matter what the discussion is. They like to enter the discussion and they want to walk away the winner. And so they're quarrelsome. Proverbs 22:10, this same vein, says, drive out a scoffer, and strife will go out, and quarreling and abuse will cease. So we have the whisperer, we have the quarrelsome man, and we have the scoffer, the person who makes fun of important things. Sarcasm in the wrong way. By the way, there's good sarcasm, right? Yeah. Even Jesus is sarcastic, right? But that's not the point of the word scoffer. A scoffer is a person who makes fun of what is important, what is true, what is real, what is moral, what is ethical. And so not only are we to disengage from anger and wrath and strife and to disengage from it when we can, but also when we recognize those who are causing it, who are the underlying cause for. Maybe it's a person who's going around and whispering things in different people's ears. Did you know? Hey, I heard. That kind of thing. Or a person who is just thin-skinned and you know, you can't say anything to them and they take an offense and then they make their offense public, or they gather up people around them. Or the person who continues to make fun of what is important, make fun of people, who does not have a serious understanding of life. Now, when you hear me say that, don't hear me to say that humor is wrong, okay? When I talk about a serious approach to life, so much of our modern world is just frivolous, you know? It's not serious. And where it's serious, it's about things that it shouldn't be. It's all misdirected. Drive out a scoffer and strife will go out. And hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. Proverbs 10 and verse 12. And so hatred will stir up strife. And one of the ways you can tell when there may be hatred at the core is to watch strife and see who's at the center of it, who's causing it. Particularly relational strife. It's interpersonal. It's not necessarily on principles or corporate practice or whatever, but it's relational. It's you and me. And I'm gathered people in. So where is the hatred that's there? But what the Proverb's doing is showing the opposite. And hatred and love are contrasted. Hatred stirs up, love covers. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. And so this idea of not being easily offended, easily provoked, of being a person who strives to be calm in the midst of attempts to stir up anger and strife. Now, one possible way to approach all the verses on anger and wrath and strife from the book of Proverbs is to use a thematic approach. This means grouping the verses according to the main idea or the message that they convey on these topics. For example, some verses warn about the negative consequences of anger. There's a whole cluster of verses, such as Proverbs 15:18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. Here it identifies the consequences and points to the opposite. Other verses advise how to avoid or deal with anger and wrath and strife, such as Proverbs 19:11. Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. Let's pause here. This is not just thinking about this. Don't be a person who is easily offended. As Christians, we should be people who learn to love one another, who learn to overlook offenses, who are not easily, are not thin-skinned, and so on. And what a difference it would make sometimes in our unity and harmony if we are a people who love one another enough to let it go, to let it pass. And obviously, there are times when offense cannot be overlooked, when an offense must be addressed, and the New Testament tells us how to do that, gives us a process for doing that. But small slights in home, in our relationships, at church, in ministry, just let them go. Let them go. Therefore, it's helpful to identify the main themes and the messages that the book of Proverbs teaches on these topics. It also helps to compare and contrast different proverbs and to see how they relate to each other. And so I want to look at those as well as some insights and applications from looking at these themes. Now, because of the nature of Proverbs, many of these will occur in more than one theme. One of my struggles with this is, okay, here's a theme and the first part of a proverb, but then here's a different theme and the same proverb, the second half is in it. So trying to deal with the repetition and the redundancy. And so I've tried to eliminate that as much as I can. So if you do this study on your own, you might find that there's some verses that are across two themes that were either left over or they were lumped in and largely looked at under one theme. Secondly, I want to remind you that the book of Proverbs is largely giving us wisdom how to engage. It's often descriptive, but not intending necessarily to give commands. So even though it might sound to us in English as though it's in the imperative voice, it's a command, many of the times this is just a descriptor. Now, there are commands here. Do not make friends with an angry man, lest you learn his ways. So there is a descriptor that has embedded in it a command to be careful, to be cautious, and so on. So expect some repetition, but a different emphasis. Now, I decided to start at the end rather than at the beginning. And logically, you should deal with the consequences of anger as your last point. But I'm going to turn it on its head, just for fun. Okay? So first, thinking about the consequences of anger. Because the first major theme all through the Proverbs is about the dangers and consequences of anger and wrath and strife. These verses warn us that being angry and wrathful or contentious can lead to many problems. They can lead to folly. They can lead to transgression which in the Hebrew means to cross a boundary, you see, leads to trouble, interpersonal, interrelational, and so on. Leads to violence, leads to hatred, and even can lead to death. They also show us that anger, wrath, and strife can affect not only ourselves, but also others around us, our families, our friends, our neighbors. So this theme of the consequences both is internal. How does wrath and anger and strife affect us? And then how does it affect others? And then I didn't want to split those out and do them separately. So they'll be kind of intermingled. We've already seen this, and again, this is going to be repetitious. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. And so the contrast between hatred and love, the contrast between stirring up and calming, the difference between strife and covering all offenses. And so thinking about how that works and the varying consequence. Proverbs 11, verse 29, whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be servant to the wise of heart. Troubles his own household. How anger and wrath and strife in a household then creates a situation in which life is unstable, dangerous, and so on. Troubles his own household will inherit the wind. And this is not the calming breeze that stirs the trees on a beautiful spring day. This is the sirocco, the mighty twisting tornado that blows off of the Arabic desert and sweeps across certain parts of Israel, leaving destruction in its wake. And we know that happened just this past week. Tornadoes across. That's the sense. A man who troubles his own household creates a tornado in his own home. A man of quick temper acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. First part of that. Both parts. Man of quick temper, what happens? Well, he acts foolishly. He acts without thought. He tends to be impulsive. All of us know angry people who are also impulsive. They act in the moment. They act without apparent thought. Meaning, they are thinking. But there's this cycle of words in their heart that have become so deeply embedded that they're unaware of it. And it looks like they're just acting in the moment. And we call them impulsive. And a person who has a quick temper will act foolishly. He will not act wisely. And then another consequence, a man of evil devices, a man who plans and plots evil, becomes a person who is hated, particularly in a godly community. That key verse for me in Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. If we could only just master this verse, what a difference it would make in our relationships and in our responses to one another. Soft answer turns away wrath. Now again, this is a Proverbs. It is descriptive. There are times where Jesus does not respond to the Pharisees with a soft answer. All right? And so this is not an absolute, but it is an advisory. It is wisdom. It is best. Because a harsh word in response to another person continues to stir up anger. And so a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. chapter 16, verse 28. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer, there they are again, a whisperer separates close friends. There's the whisperer again. A person who is dishonest, who does not speak truth to people. The dishonesty here is not necessarily thief or something like that. This is a person who is dishonest with others. Does not speak the truth in love, as the New Testament would put it. And so, and tends to spread strife. And even a whisperer can separate close friends. Chapter 17, verse 14. The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so let quit before the quarrel breaks out. Now, here's one of those places in the Bible where you go, what is he talking about? Okay, now I know we've got some young kids in the room, so parents, you might have to explain something about this. But it's the Bible's way of just saying when you start to pee, it's hard to stop. That's what it means. And so the beginning of strife is hard to stop. So don't get started. Right? Some of you are all red-faced. Sorry. It's what it says. I'm sorry. Proverbs 17, 19, whoever loves transgression loves strife, and he who makes his door high seeks destruction. This is an interesting verse because it evokes something that I saw in China. In China, when you are the emperor, then your level of importance and standing as a provincial emperor, provincial king, ruler, or if you're the emperor of the whole country, then in your gate to your court or the gate to your city, then you would have, your gate does not have, it's, you're going to go up steps. And so in two major cities in China, the ancient gateway into that city has steps that are very, very high. Why? Well, it denotes the person's exaltedness. And so you have to go up the steps to see, and you get to the top of the steps, and the gate opens up usually into a massive courtyard. And or it opens up into a grand entry, all right? And then you have to go down because you are going down to meet this person who is exalted. So that's what this is alluding to. A person who makes his entry very high because he views himself as a person of very high standing. He makes his door high, is seeking your description. But a person who loves to break the bounds, a person who loves to break down norms, a transgressor, a person who relishes that, loves strife and will often be involved in strife. Proverbs 18:6, a fool's lips walk into a fight, and his mouth invites a beating. What a picture, right? You know, you can just see these lips, you know, that this just begs to be a meme, right? You know, lips walking into a fight. But then his mouth, because he's done that, then his mouth is just inviting a beating. But what is he talking about? He's talking about words, right? And so a person who uses words and loves to start fights with words is inviting being destroyed, being attacked by words. It's his mouth that deserves a beating. This is a point to pause to say, one of the things in reading Proverbs is distinguishing between the imagery and what is being described underneath. Because is the second part of this just what we ought to do, you know? If a person is continually loves transgression and loves strife, then do we pop him in the mouth? Is that what we do? Is that what the author has in mind? No. There's an image that's being drawn here. Proverbs 18:19, a brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling is like the bars of a castle. And we all understand this. A person who is easily offended or a person who has a deep offense, very difficult to approach, very difficult to try to heal the breach, to resolve the strife. It's an honor for a man to keep aloof from strife, but every fool will be involved in quarreling, Proverbs 23. And then the warning that we've already seen, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in them. And so, being careful, who are your friends? What are they like? How do you, as a Christian, help a person who is a angry person without yourself being so affected by them? And how do you counsel and advise from an appropriate distance so that you're not learning their ways? Proverbs 26:17, whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own, it's like someone who takes a passing dog by the ears. Now let me remind you that in Bible days, dogs were not pets. They were not these cute little fluffy things that sit on our laps while we watch TV. Dogs were generally viewed in a negative way, if not absolutely feared, because they ran loose, they were wild, they were scavengers, they hung out around the city dumps. Okay? And so this verse takes on a slightly different meaning in that sense. So someone who likes to get involved in fights that they have no business getting involved in is like grabbing a pit bull by its little stubby ears and shaking it. It's probably going to be a problem, right? And we all know people who simply cannot stay away from somebody else's trouble, problem, strife, offense. They're all the time getting involved. And so they are grabbing the dog by its ears. They're going to get bit. I have so many verses here, and my thing says I'm 45% done, and it's 20 after. So let me just pick a few that we haven't touched on. A greedy man stirs up strife, but the one who trusts in the Lord will be enriched. Here's the consequence of greed, and that he stirs up strife. And as he reaches out and grabs and wants more, the tendency then is to lead to arguments and disputes and strife. But in contrast, the one who puts their trust in the Lord will be enriched. This is, yes, in the Old Testament has a physical sense, but even in the Old Testament, this has a spiritual sense and will be enriched spiritually. And then Proverbs 30, verse 33. As pressing milk produces curds, and pressing the nose produces blood, so pressing anger produces strife. This is one of those proverbs you look at and you go, well, what's the point, right? And we are probably, none of you are dairy. Are any of you dairy farmers? You know what? Pressing milk to get curds. Okay, I won't explain all that, but it's the beating out and the result of the curds coming to the top that you peel off and you have curds and whey, and the one that we really understand, that if you pound on somebody's nose, it will bleed. Well, great, we didn't need a proverb to tell us that, but notice it's a comparison. So the person who presses the milk causes the curds to rise. The person who pushes on or presses on or hits someone in the nose, it produces blood. So pressing on anger produces strife. and so on. Now, what about avoiding or resolving of anger? Another important theme is about the benefits and best blessings of being slow to anger, of being gentle and peaceful. These verses encourage us to be patient, to be calm, to be kind, to be poised to forgive when dealing with others, especially those who offend or provoke us. They also teach us that being slow to anger and gentle and peaceful can bring us many advantages. Advantages such as understanding and honor, life and joy and favor. Just a few of these verses, and I'm going to pick some out. I don't usually post these, our Proverbs series, but I'm going to post this. In fact, I'm going to post an expanded version of this because I took out a whole bunch of verses for tonight thinking, I'll never get through all of this. Now the shorter version, I'm never going to get through all this. So, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Proverbs 12:18. So there's a way of talking that just is like sticking a sword in. Then there's a way of talking that brings healing in the midst of offense and strife. Proverbs 12:18. Proverbs 14:16. One who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is reckless and careless, and therefore goes headlong into trouble and goes headlong into strife. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. Being slow to anger. Now, some people are more naturally inclined that way because they are conflict adverse. And so sometimes just being conflict adverse can look like a virtue and often serves well, except when conflict is needed and then the person avoids it at all costs. So the Bible doesn't look at it that way. It talks about just being slow to anger, quiets contention. An important thing in Proverbs 16:7, when a man's ways please the Lord, he, God, makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. And so God, when we are pleasing to God in our ways, the way we conduct ourselves in our lifestyle and the way we engage others, then even those who are against us, God may cause them to be at peace with us. I look at Proverbs 25:15. With patience, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue may break a bone. And so this idea of just being patient, particularly with those who are over us, who have authority over us, and thinking in terms of a soft anchor, soft tongue. It's such a vivid image, right? A soft tongue breaking bones. Kind of reminds us, you know, the false saying. You know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That is so not true. And we, you know, we say it, and we tell our children, well, you know, and yeah. Proverbs 16:32, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. John Bunyan in The Holy War uses this verse several times. In the sense of ruling our own spirit, of ruling our own interior house, and therefore being someone who is slow to anger, and we rule our spirit. This verse is almost quoted in the New Testament. It's certainly alluded to more than once. Proverbs 20:22. Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will deliver you. And that verse is alluded to several times in the New Testament. Vengeance is mine, I will repay. Not you. That's the implication. Give space for the wrath of God, we are told. And here it is. Do not say, and the idea here is say in your heart, I am going to pay them back. Rather, wait for the Lord. Let him to do it. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and let not your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and be displeased and turn his anger away from him. And so even when someone who we are opposed to, even when someone who is wicked and evil and so on, and they fall, they fail, even when they are destroyed, we need to be careful in this life, in our world, in our sinful fallenness, rejoicing in that. Particularly when what is in view here is that we see ourselves as been a contributor to their fall. And therefore we rejoice in it because we see ourselves. God says, well, you know, you may not have had an awful lot to do with that. Maybe it was just me. So you know what? I'm going to teach you a lesson. Proverbs 26, verses 20 and 22. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body. Well, we can't close without contrasting anger and wrath and strife with their opposites. One of the themes that appears frequently in the book of Proverbs, because of its parallel structure, is to contrast this with that, anger with this, strife with that, and so on. And so there is strife on the one, anger, wrath, and strife on the one hand, in peace and patience and harmony on the other. The book warns against the dangers of being hot-tempered, quarrelsome, and violent, and encourages being slow to anger and gentle and peaceful. Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is hasty temper exalts folly. For a tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy rots the bones. The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouths of the poor fools pour out folly. In Proverbs 15:4, a gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness breaks the spirit. Well, let me wrap this up. I want to close with the three verses that have transformed my own life. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I want to be a person who gets into situations where people are angry, either at each other or even at you, at me. I want to respond with a gentle word, a soft answer. And secondly, a wrathful man stirs up discord, but one slow to anger calms strife. Which kind of person are you? What marks your life? Are you someone who's always in the middle of discord and strife and arguments and fights? And you have to ask yourself, why is that true? Am I a whisperer? Am I a scoffer? Am I an angry person? Or am I someone who tends, who works hard, who thinks carefully, who engages in strife in order, and the result tends to be the letting out of steam and an ability to carry things forward to a peaceful conclusion? And finally, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit is better than he who takes a city. Well, there's so much more, and I'll post the larger manuscript, so if you're interested in seeing all of these verses, then hopefully that will be helpful to you. The wisdom that God gives us in reference to anger and wrath and strife. Let us be a people who seek peace so that, as Paul said in the middle of Romans chapter 12, and in the middle of that, engaging those who are coming against us as much as lies with you, live at peace with all men. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word and so much. I didn't even think about how much there is here and to try to say in 40 minutes. Lord, I pray that you would have convicted us where necessary, that you have confirmed us where we have done well. and that you will continue to cause us to grow, to be a people who prize harmony and peace, and who eschew conflict and strife, who are careful about entering into the arguments of others, whose first words tend to be peaceful and soft and careful. Make this so in all our lives for the glory of Jesus. Amen.